I mean, even when the pews are padded and the chairs are padded, and it's hard work sitting and listening to people talk. It is. So your presence here these 48 hours is greatly appreciated, because it speaks well of you and your attitude toward Jesus and the life that he gives. So we thought we would kind of end by just talking about some ways to speak to the heart. We've been talking about matters of the heart, and we need to be speaking it too. We need to be doing. I remember preaching a very large congregation in Minneapolis, and it was early on in my LFL ministry, and as I stood in the narthex shaking hands with folks, I, out of the corner of my eye, I saw these three gals, and they were standing up against the wall like this. And I thought, oops, I must have offended, you know, somebody. And so they were there, and it was obvious they were waiting for me. But as the last person shook my hand, sure enough, they started filing over. But as they did, their countenance changed, and they came over and they smiled, and they said, "Pastor, that was a great sermon. And I was waiting for the next word, and you know what it was, right? But," I mean, I knew it was coming. "That was a great sermon, but you didn't tell us what to do." And they were right. They were right. I didn't give any indication now of what we can do with this wonderful message that we have. So we don't want to leave this conference. I don't want to see people like this. So we'll try to do a little bit of that. And actually, you know, I joked about preaching to the choir last night. Well, I am preaching to the choir really here when it comes to doing, because you are the doers out there. You're doing so many things. But this will be maybe a good review of where we've been, and will send us off, hopefully encouraged to think about these things and to do things again. And honestly, I will. I'll try to flip through these slides as fast as I can, because we want to get going. We want to get home. And I want to get back to my room and have a beer, actually. Michigan State, yeah, watch. And I heard this. Somebody said, "What's in there?" Coffee. Okay, let's go. Speaking to matters of the heart, Ecclesiastes 3:7. We know what that says, right? There's a time to be silent, but there's a time to speak. There is a time to speak. And we want to talk about that, as particularly there's a time to speak to matters of the heart. My dad, one of his sayings was, if you don't have anything to say, then don't prove it by talking. See? Could think of some politicians maybe here or something like that, but I won't bring pastors into this. Yeah, if you don't have anything to say, don't prove it talking. But, and I love that word, but if you do have something to say, and if you have something to say that's, you know, really positive, that's actually very powerful, something that's filled with hope and something that affirms life, something that actually changes lives, then it's no time for silence. It is time to speak. And we have such a message, do we not? It's the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is the most powerful and positive, life-affirming, life-changing message in the universe. And it's tailor-made for matters of the heart. And so it's this message that tells us the value of human life. And you can say, "Oh, this is Lamb. He's doing that thing again with created, redeemed, and called." Yep. If you've heard me speak, no matter what presentation, we always start with this. That, because this is our foundation. The value of human, where it comes from God. So Human life has value because every human being is created by the hands of God, knit together in your mother's womb, shaped and formed in the womb. You know, as I tell the kids, we could have the tag, you know, on our neck, like we see on clothes, and what would it say? Handmade by God. Handmade by God. And then God loved what he made with his hands so much that when we got lost in sin, he sent his son into this world, conceived in a fallopian tube like we were, born of the Virgin Mary, and then suffered and died to pay the price to redeem. Redeem means to buy something back with a price. Okay? To buy it back with a price. And then every human being there we are. I may have to get closer to my computer to do this. But every human being is someone God desires to call into a relationship with him. And it's a, when I have time to expand this, it's a handheld relationship. God holds on to us. He holds on to our hands. You're called in righteousness, he says, and I will hold you by the hand. It's not us holding on to the hand of God, but God holding on to our hands. Right. So this, you see, this is where it is. And so this applies to everybody, right? If you're an embryo in a petri dish, if you're frozen in an infertility clinic somewhere, if you're a baby in the womb, if you're an LFLer sitting in Grand Rapids, Michigan at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church, if you're a grandma in the nursing home bed who doesn't know her family members anymore, Uncle Ralph in a coma in the cancer ward, none of that matters. Your value has not diminished one single bit. You're still created, redeemed, and called. And that's the this powerful message that we have. So, whose hearts do we speak to? Well, here's our mission statement, equipping Lutherans to be gospel-motivated voices for life. So, our target audience is, first and foremost, it's Lutherans, right? We'll speak to the church. Speak to the church and to speak the truth in love. See, when Paul wrote that, we use that verse a lot about, you know, when we're out on calls and so forth, supposed to speak the truth in love. But the context is in the church. He's telling church members, when you're talking with one another, you guys in the church, you speak the truth to one another, but you do it in love. Because that's how we grow up in unity to our head, Jesus, the verse goes on. We don't become united by ignoring differences. We become united by speaking the truth. And then we grow up, Paul says. So we need to be doing that with one another. That's a big part of what we do. We've got to speak to each other, speak to the church, so that they understand this. And here's the paradigm that we can use. It's Paul in Acts 17. In the first part of that chapter, Paul is in Thessalonica. Right? Remember, Paul, whenever he could, he went to a synagogue. Because even though he was called to be apostle to the Gentiles, he desperately wanted his fellow Jews to know that Jesus was the Christ. How badly did he want that? He even said he'd be willing to be damned himself if his fellow Jews could be saved. That's how much he wanted that. And so he went to the synagogue. And what did he do in the synagogue? We read in Acts 17 that he reasoned with them from the scriptures, showing that Jesus was the, he reasoned with them. Can't you just see Paul, you know, quoting Old Testament prophecies and then their fulfillment in this guy, Jesus? You know, Micah says here, my fellow Jews, that he was going to be born in Bethlehem. Well, even though he was called Jesus of Nazareth, he wasn't born in Nazareth. He was actually born in Bethlehem. Oh. And Isaiah talked about this suffering servant guy. You know, who would it be that would be numbered among transgressors and yet buried with the rich? How could that be? Well, let me tell you about Jesus. When he died, he was there on the cross. He was between two transgressors, but he was actually buried in a rich man's grave. See, just prophecy fulfillment, reasoning with them from the scriptures. And how did that turn out for Paul? Some, we read, some were persuaded and believed. Now, if we look at our vision at Lutheran's Life, it's every Lutheran congregation upholding the God-given value of human life and influencing society to do the same. If we're faithful to our mission of equipping Lutherans to be gospel-motivated voices, then sooner or later, we're going to have this great vision come true, right? Every Lutheran congregation out there will be joyfully upholding the sanctity of life. And then those folks will be joyfully sharing that message and influencing our culture and, you know, making abortion unthinkable out there. So we are called to be the light of the world and the salt of the earth. So we are also called to speak to matters of the heart out there in our world. And we have a paradigm for that. Also in Acts 17, same chapter, Paul later on is in Athens, and there he's among pagans, right? And he's walking around the city, and he sees all these altars to all these various gods that they had. And he's offered an opportunity to speak, because they like strange teachings and thoughts. So he gets offered an opportunity, Mars Hill. And here's how he starts his sermon. I perceive in every way you are very religious. He doesn't start by saying, you pagans, you heathens, you haters of God, you are on your way to hell, fire and brimstone and gnashing of your teeth. I said, you're religious folks. Wow, that's, I see that. That's good. You know, I was walking around, I saw this altar to an unknown God. If you don't mind, I'd like to tell you about him. You see what he's doing? He's starting right where they're at. And then he goes on from there, and he starts proclaiming scriptural truths, but he never quotes a scripture. He quotes their own poets, but he doesn't quote the Bible. But he starts with creation. It's a great place to start, to do this apologetic. He starts with creation. He quotes his poet, says, you know, your own poets say, in him we live and move and have our being. So if you're picturing God as someone who gives life and in him we live and move, and, well then how come you've got him here like a rock or a stone or something, you know? See, this, he's reasoning with them based on where they're at. And then, so he just keeps reasoning, but never reasoning with them from the scriptures. Now, he ends up in the same place that he did in Thessalonica, Jesus Christ risen from the dead. But he gets there in a different way. And so we are talking, speaking to matters of the heart to folks out in our culture. We don't always want to start with reasoning with them from the scriptures. But we have lots of places we can start. We can reason with them based on biology and based on the truths that we know, because it's all God's, right? I mean, natural laws and truths of science, that's all God's stuff. And we can use that and reason with people. Or we can walk beside them in their pain and their misery and their suffering and touch them that way, love them, and then look for opportunities to share the source of this love that we have. But we don't start by Bible thumping, as we like to say. But there's an article once, it's a very good article about Bible thumpers, and I think the title of it was, I Want to Be a Bible Thumper. and his whole idea was, we got to be careful when we say, well, we don't want to be Bible thumpers, that we don't leave the Bible back in the church or in our homes. We still want to be out there sharing truth of Scripture. After all, the bottom line, and Pastor Fleischman alluded to this yesterday, bottom line is sharing the gospel and extending the kingdom of God. That's what we want to be doing. And so we don't leave the Bible behind. We just don't hold it up like a hammer. So let's talk a little bit about the how, then, do we speak. And I like to use a good old David and Goliath. Remember the challenge of Goliath. This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me someone and let us fight. And you remember the courageous response of the Israelites. On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. And then this little kid comes along, little shepherd boy on a bread and cheese run to his brothers who are there on the battle line. And he hears what's going on. He says, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he defied the armies of the living God?" He can't understand why this is happening. Now, I want you to notice something. Who is Goliath defying? The ranks of Israel. Who does David have him defying? "I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Now please note that this is singular. So it's not referring to the armies of Israel. So who is it referring to? "You mess with Israel, you uncircumcised Philistines, and you are messing with God. And who are you to do that?" And when you mess with life, who are you messing with? Yeah, the Lord of life. Yeah, the Lord of life. So we have, David was concerned about the death of a giant, but we're concerned about this giant of death that's in our culture, and this giant of death in our culture is defying us. He's defying us. "This day I defy the ranks of Christians. Give me someone and let us fight." It's fine. And so what do? Cringe in dismay and terror? No, we don't. The fact that you're here says you're ready to accept that challenge. You've accepted that challenge. Some of you long, long ago. So remember what David did? He took his staff in his hands and chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. Saul wanted to armor him. "Here's my armor." And, in the movies you see how that, and trying to put that on, you can imagine that didn't fit. He wasn't used to that at all. And he's, "No, just God's got my sling here." And he goes out and he gets 5 smooth stones. Now why do you think 5? Now there's going to be, I know some pastors are going to answer me here. Why 5? Yes? All right, that could be one answer, but 5 brothers. Yeah, Goliath had brothers. Okay, maybe. There's no hint that the brothers were around, really. So, that's good. In fact, you'd get a smiley face if I had some with me here. What he said was maybe he was a little nervous and he might miss one with one. And I think maybe that could be. See, David was very confident, right? Remember, he said he would deliver me from the paw of the lion, the mouth of the bear. He can deliver me from this uncircumcised Philistine. I don't care how big he is. He was confident. But he was confident of victory. Not necessarily the road to victory, not necessarily the battle plan, and he might miss. He might, might need one in each kneecap to bring the guy down, So he took 5 stones, and of course we know it only took one. And he ran to him. Yeah, he ran to him, and that's when he was saying, "You come to me in the name of the Lord with spear and shield, and I come to you in the name." And he was running right into the battle. He wasn't waiting for the battle to come to him. He was going out into the battle. And see, that's where our pregnancy resource centers, they're going out into the battle. And when you go out there and sidewalk counsel and we do life chains and those kinds of things, and we're going out there into the battle. Going to them, all right. Well, let's just look at some stones. Now, I hesitate doing this because it's late in the day and some of you might be a little groggy and you might not get all this in. So I'm going to say this now. Please don't anybody take this literally that we're supposed to be throwing stones. I've kind of rethought this analogy, but it was too late to change it. But We do have stones. We do have stones. So let's just look at some of those. We have a political stone, right? That's a stone that we can use as we fight this giant. It's an important stone. And we'll talk about each of these in a minute. And there's the activist stone, you know, doing those life chains and marches and picketing, those kinds of things. And there's a service stone, very important one. Pregnancy centers, congregations having life teams, human care teams, and serving the congregation, all those things. The education stone, that's a pretty hefty one that Lutherans for Life carries around in its pouch, education stone. And then there's witness and prayer. Actually, those could be two stones, but I needed five, remember, so. And we're gonna look at them separately, too. So let us look at these. And it's interesting, Lori Trinchy in her pre-conference, the team, life team, the summit thing, and I got in there towards the end of that, but you know, they were picking, these were there on the sticky notes. These kinds of things were there. This is what we do. This is what we can do. So the political, I'll just run through these. Inform yourself. There's a lot of things out there that are important right now. We need to know what they are. And I was just in North Dakota, and Measure One is their big thing there. It's a human rights amendment to their constitution to try to protect all of the good, solid abortion curbing laws that they have in their state. And you know it's important, and you know it's going to have an effect, a positive effect, because Planned Parenthood is pouring $1.5 million into North Dakota. Planned Parenthood from outside of North Dakota. Most of the money coming in is coming from outside North Dakota to battle this thing. So, you know, inform yourself. And we got, you know, Iowa has an important Senate race that's really close. So we've got Joni Ernst. You may have heard of Joni Ernst. Why? Because her commercial made national, there's heads now, her commercial made national news. She's the one who said she was a farm gal who castrated pigs and she'd like to be sent to Washington to make them squeal. It was a brilliant move because it gave her national recognition instantly. I mean, a lot of it was, of course, negative on the talk shows, but that's, okay, you know, PR is PR, and she got out there, so. And not kissing a pig, no. It's the other end. Yeah. I didn't. See, I'm a country boy. You know, I grew up in a small town on a farm, but you know, I don't want to assume everybody knows the anatomy of a pig. Now I'll tell you, I had vicars, and had one of my vicars who was from he had always lived in big cities, you know, New York and Boston, Cincinnati. I think his dad was military and. He was always in a big city, and now he comes to Garner, Iowa for his vicarage. And we're driving from Garner to Mason City. It's about 18 miles, and that's where the big hospital was. So I was going to show him where the hospital was, and we were going to do some hospital calls together. So we're driving by, and there's some pigs out in a pig lot there. And he said, "Oh, I never knew pigs were different colors." So I don't assume. All right. So, reform ourselves. Important elections going on. We need to know about those, and then we need to let our elected officials know, and with the emails, the phone calls, and so on. And certainly, vote. Get out there and vote. With our For Life convictions, and campaign. Can you join somebody's campaign staff and campaign for them? Yes, absolutely. Can a pastor join somebody's campaign staff? Sure he can, as an individual Christian. Now, you know, you might send the conflicting message there, but he has every right to do that. Just can't get up in the pulpit and say and campaign for that person. So it'd be a little hard for a pastor maybe, but as individual Christians, we can do that. We just can't campaign for someone in the church. But we can advocate for issues that are for Measure One, that human rights amendment. That's not electing someone. That's a referendum. And LCMS churches all around, everywhere I went, had vote yes signs on in their lawns on Measure One. And the district president had supper with the district president on Saturday night, and he came into Fargo for the conference that I was speaking at, and then he was preaching there, and he was going to address Measure One, because the gospel for that Sunday was, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God. And he says, how can I read that and not talk about Measure One? Yeah. I thought, that's a good idea. So I did too. It wasn't the whole focus, but I had to mention that. Run for office. See, we need more Christians in public office. We need more Lutheran Christians in public office. Yes, sir. I don't see any.
One?
Okay. All right. We got one. There's two of you. Good. Well-deserved. Well-deserved applause. Okay, let's go to the activist stone, the picketing. I'm defining that as, you know, more carrying the signs and so forth. Not screaming and yelling at people, but, you know, carrying signs. And then the sidewalk counseling is, you know, trying to engage in proper ways. There's ways to do that, ways not to do that. And you don't want to do that without some training. And that's not extensive, but you just need to know some do's and don'ts. It's not hard to do. Prayer vigil, that's, you know, pretty easy. The 40 days for life, that's what that is. That's just trying to pray 24 hours a day in front of an abortion mill for 40 days. And that's had great success. God has worked good things through 40 days for life. Closing down mills, getting workers' staff to leave and come out. So it's a very good thing. And some reason, you know, Lutherans hesitate to get involved in these things, and I'm just saying we can and we should be as much as you're able to do. You don't have to. It's just praying. It's just praying. And the marches for life, locally, statewide, D.C., you know, big LCMS Life Ministries having a big conference in association with the March for Life this year, so it's a great time to come and learn and participate. President Harrison, I learned this from the North Dakota LCMS DP. He's trying to get every LCMS district president to the march this year. That's his goal. Because 2 years ago was the first time he'd been at a march, President Harrison of the LCMS. It's the first time he'd been there. And I could tell, I walked with him for a while, and I could tell this really impressed him. And he told me, he said, I got to get more of our guys out here to do this. So evidently he's trying to do it, he's putting the screws on, you know, which is good. Of course, how many of you have been to a march in D.C.? A good number, that's good. So you understand it's really not a march for life, it's a shuffle for life. But that's the beauty of it, is it, you know, you really kind of shuffle along with all these people that are there, but it, and that can be kind of frustrating, but it's wonderful because you're shuffling along with all these people who are there. They're there. And if it's snowing or raining or cold or sleet or mud, they're there every year. And so it sends a message, you know, not that the media actually covers it, but it does send a message. But more so, it sends a message to your heart. We're not alone. We're not alone. Service. I mean, all these things. You know about all this. pregnancy centers and volunteering at those centers, or we can serve through our financial support, we can visit homebound care centers, all these congregational activities, you know, just good stuff. Education from the pulpit. Really? Yes, from the pulpit. We can be, I mean, we you know, I suppose I could be challenged about making a distinction between education and proclamation, and that the pulpit's for proclamation, and I understand that, but we can proclaim on these issues, and we can preach didactically, we can preach and teach as we do so, and it's important, and then to have Bible studies on these issues. And again, Lutheran's Life has stuff. That's what we do. We equip. So we try to make it easy to educate in our Lutheran churches. A witness, all of the above. See, all of the above provide opportunity to witness. Remember what witness means? It says, like on your witness stand, you're testifying to what you know to be true. That's what a witness is. It's not, you should do this, it's here's what I believe. And it gives us opportunity then, and all these settings, all the other stones give us opportunity to witness to our faith and what is driving us to do what we're doing here. It's more than just saving lives. It's saving souls, too. So we can, you know, engage people, we can have compassion on people, listen to people, talk to people. And then prayer, so, you know, some folks can't do any of these other things. They're just limited physically, but they can pray. They can pray and pray and pray and pray. But we know that it wasn't the stone that actually slayed Goliath, right? The stone brought him down, and then David took Goliath's own sword and whacked off his head. So the final blow came from the sword. And if we're really going to defeat this giant of death, we're going to need more than stones. We're going to need a sword. And we have one. Put on the full armor of God and take up the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. That's why it's so important in what we do that it is based on this, and that this permeates our motivation and our message ultimately out there. Yes, we can show compassion first, we can educate, but ultimately we need to be using this because we want to change hearts here. Only this can really speak to matters of the heart and make a difference. And make a difference. So, this is what we have. The gospel of Jesus Christ, the most powerful, positive, life-affirming, life-changing message in the universe. That's our sword. Now, in the church, we start with that. And this is just kind of review now. But in the church, that's where we start, with the word. Reason from the scriptures. And then what we need to try to do then, we've got to help our people make the connection to all these life issues and all that are out there, to help them understand that they are not political issues. So that's what Life Sunday is going to be about this year, and our focus for 2015. I don't know if you've looked, if you've received yet, or sample packs have just been mailed, but the bulletin insert on the back of it is actually a quiz this year. You have to take a quiz. And you're given a little situation, like, you know, she's 16 and she's pregnant and she doesn't know what to do. And then you have to check a box. Political issue, matter of the heart. And that's what the quiz is on the back. You'll probably get them all right, but so we start with a word there. And then, see, when we're in our culture, then we can start with all these issues and the people that are struggling with these things and then have opportunity to draw our sword, so to speak. So you're going to leave here and say, Lamb said we got to throw stones at people and whack their heads off with a sword. No, not this audience. Okay, I'm really close to the end here. I'm stealing this from Gene Garten. When the Israelites saw Goliath, they said, oh my, he's so big, we can never win. And when David saw Goliath, he said, oh my, he's so big, I can never miss. Folks, you can't miss. We just can't miss with all these matters of the hearts that are out there. So many opportunities for us in all these settings that we have. And that's what came out. Again, I point back to Lori and her position as ministry and mission coordinator and all that we're trying to do in Lutherans for Life to get down at the congregational level and in our chapters and life teams and help people understand all of these things and help them know about the stones that we have and the powerful message that we have and that there's a connection to these issues and we don't have to be screaming and yelling, they're not political, and all that's what all this activity is about. And I was, as I sat there in your session, it was like, I said, well, she's going to think I copied her when she sees this PowerPoint, but I had it done before I went to that. But it's part of what we're doing, so we can never miss. All right, I'm almost done, and I have four more slides. Some of you have seen these slides, because just like at the beginning, when you listen to Lamb, you got to hear about created, redeemed, and called. At the end, you got to put up with these four slides. So here they are. The bunny boy, you ever feel like the bunny? You're just overwhelmed, and in this life-affirming work, it's like death is such a big giant, and death has all the money, and death has all the press, and on and on and on, and it can seem like it is going to be impossible. This is a losing battle. Well, you've got to rethink that. We need to think differently, because we know what the gospel has done about death. It has been swallowed up in victory. Swallowed up. You see the picture? We were at a friend's house once. He had this big old dog was laying in the living room floor, and there was a very large, old, crusty-looking sweat sock that this dog was chewing on. And I was just kind of watching. It seemed like the sock was inching more and more into his mouth. And I said to my friend, he's going to swallow that sock. Oh, no, he just chews on it. I said, really? I think he's swallowing this. No, and preaching, and the sock was gone. It was swallowed up. It was no, well, it did show up later, but, you know. Yeah. The analogy kind of stops right there. But sometimes I just shoot myself in the foot when I say things like that. The point is, it's this picture of swallowed up is gone. It's gone. And so we're not striving for victory over death. We're striving in victory over death that's already been won. So, even though this is, walk over here. Even though this is how it seems sometimes in our lives and in our work in this ministry, this is the reality that we're living in. Yeah, the bunny wins this. The bunny swallowed up the wolf. We win because Christ has won. And please remember always, 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 always that this is God's battle. It's a spiritual battle. It's his battle. And the victory has already been won. Now he wants warriors. He wants folks like you and me doing what we can do with the stones that he's given us. You know. But he is the one who's already won that victory. He is the one who's guiding our slings and our stones. And he's the one who's working powerfully through his word to touch people's hearts and the matters of the heart. And that's what we're a part of. That's what we're a part of. So leave here not with heavy hearts, but with uplifted hearts because of Christ's victory that we get to share in and share. See, I'm done 20 minutes early. You didn't even know that because it just said this starts at 4. And I could have gone till 7 and you would have been gone, and yeah. But before you all run off, Laura Davis has an announcement that she wants to make.